You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're still waiting for The Rock to declare his candidacy for President of the United States of America. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesdeski, and I would like to wish you all a happy Independence Day. I am not usually a holiday guy, but I think this year especially, it's important to celebrate our independence, our individualism, and as such, I'm going this episode alone. I wanted to do a special alone episode, a special solo episode, solo is the word I'm looking for, to celebrate individualism on Independence Day weekend and when I'm recording this episode. So if you have friends out there who also need to know about independence and need to know about individualism or celebrate those things, send them over here to the midside, send them to our archive, send them to this episode, see what we are all about. Likewise, if you would like to support us, you can always do it on patreon.com/themidside or themidside.com/patreon. Give as much or as little as you want per episode. It's up to you. And also, we are now on Locals, the site that William has been talking about. We're going to try and transition to that from Patreon. I don't know the URL yet. I do know that one of you already found us. And I think it's a monthly subscription rather than a per-episode subscription. So, suckers, you go on there for a month and I only do one episode. No, I'm just kidding. We're still going to do the 4 episodes per month. But it is kind of funny that that's a monthly subscription. I don't know. I'm going to learn all the details from William. But any support you want to give us, that would be great. I appreciate it. I'm not going to just say Venmo me or PayPal me or give you a Cash App handle. Cash App handle. I'm not going to do that. You know why? Because I am not a 2-bit slut online who has to set up an OnlyFans. And I'm not calling all women sluts. I'm just saying, what does it say about our current society that so many women, so many young women, can just go on OnlyFans and make some money? OnlyFans and make some money. Man, get some respect for yourself. But that is another topic for another day. And there are a lot of things to talk about this week because a lot happened. I want to start with coronavirus because that's where we are. Let's just start there. Let's just get that out of the way. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. There's just something specific that happened that I want to go into about it. But first, a little preamble. The mask thing is, of course, still going on. I don't know about you guys, but if I go on Twitter, it's on my timeline constantly. And I saw a tweet yesterday that sort of embodies, encapsulates the whole mask thing. So Brandon Routh, actor known for playing Superman and Superman Returns. He's been in the CW for a while playing a superhero. He tweeted a picture of himself wearing a mask with a bunch of little Superman logos on it. I don't know why, if you were going to go the Superman route, you wouldn't just wear one big Superman logo on your face. I mean, it's sort of like putting a sign on your car that's really hard to read. Well, if people can't read it, they're not going to know what it says. So why would you put a bunch of little Superman logos? It just looks like a black mask with red and yellow on it. Or, you know what it actually looks like? It looks like pizza. It looks like a bunch of pizza slices. So why not put the one logo? Anyway, this is what he tweeted text-wise along with that picture. I don't always play a superhero, but when I do, I care about those around me, and if there was the slightest chance I could spread a highly contagious deadly virus to my loved ones / strangers without my awareness, I'd wear a mask. Protecting fellow citizens honors the American way. And he hashtagged American way. A lot of this I've been over already, right? The idea that he says, if there was the slightest chance I could spread a highly contagious deadly virus to my loved ones, strangers without my awareness, I'd wear a mask. The slightest chance I could spread a highly contagious deadly virus without my awareness. I hate to break it to you, Brandon Routh. That always exists. There is always the slightest chance that you're spreading something that could kill someone without your awareness. That is called the nature of being alive. And again, I've talked about this on previous episodes, but it's utterly ridiculous that people are saying things like this. And then combine that with, here's the other thing, highly contagious, deadly virus. I don't necessarily disagree with the highly contagious part. I think this virus has shown to be more contagious than, well, I don't know. Is it more contagious than the common cold? I would like somebody to tell me about that. Or I would like to read about that. If anyone has any information about that, let me know. Because that'd be interesting to find out. Because what this seems like right now is, it seems like, and I've said this over the past week, past couple weeks, this seems like a virus that's as contagious as the common cold. I mean, it's a coronavirus. That's what the common cold is, right? As contagious as the common cold and as deadly as the flu. So it's a common cold that's more deadly, that's deadlier than the usual common cold. That's what this seems like to me. But to call this a deadly disease, especially as the case rate's going up and the death rate's going down, it's making this seem like it's worse. This is the problem with the rhetoric. I don't know if it's the online rhetoric. I don't know if it's the emotionalist rhetoric. But that's the problem with this. I mean, he's promoting this because he wants to be Superman again, right? DC's got this whole multiverse thing going on, and he wants to be Superman again. That's why he's promoting this. But look at the rhetoric he's feeding into. What it's essentially, what this tweet is, and what masks have become, is they're the physical form of altruism. It's that you're less concerned about your life than you are about everybody else's. So to say it another way, you're more concerned about everybody else's life than you are your life. And here's my thing, and this is the last thing I'm going to say about masks before I move on to the thing I really want to talk about with the coronavirus, the effects of it. The reason I won't wear a mask unless required to by a private business like Disney or Universal. I mean, here's an example. I ordered Chipotle the other day. I did pickup. And their pickup is next to the register, right? They have a shelf with the bags on it. I walk into the store without a mask, and a girl tries to tell me, put a mask on. There's a family of three sitting there without masks on because they're eating. All right, so you can be inside without a mask if you're eating, or even outside without a mask if you're eating, but otherwise you have to wear a mask. It doesn't make any sense, right? You can still transmit it when you're eating. And I just look at her and say, no, I'm going to grab the bag, and I'm going to get out. I was in there less than 30 seconds. So even then, I wouldn't wear a mask. First of all, if Chipotle was really concerned about that, they would put their shelf near the front of the store so that people could spend less time in the store. They're less likely to transmit it then, and they're less likely to contract it then. But are they really thinking about it? No, they're just unthinkingly going along with this mask thing. And here's why I won't wear a mask. Creep. Legal creep. One of the things I hate the most about California is they nickel and dime you in everything. Oh, there's a tax on this bill. There's a tax on this bill. There's a tax here. There's a tax there. Their gas prices are so high because they nickel and dime you, and you just go, oh, well, you know, our gas is just more expensive. Nickel and dime you on your utility bills. 10 cents for a plastic bag, right? Anything you do, they nickel and dime you in California. This is the same thing freedom-wise. That is why I do not wear a mask. I will not normalize this small breach of freedom, because then they go, you know what? You're all used to the mask. We're just going to keep that law, because as I just said with the Brandon Routh tweet, oh, well, anytime you could have the slightest chance of transmitting highly contagious, deadly virus to loved ones, strangers without your awareness. Anytime. So that just normalizes it. Adam Carolla talks about this when he talks about smokers, where first smokers were like, fine, in a restaurant, you can give us our own section, the smoking and non-section. Then it was, no, you have to go outside. And now it's like you can't be within 100 feet of the building or something. And that's what it is. That's what I see happening with the mask thing. We have to draw a line, and we have to have principles. And the principles have to be based upon our assessment of reality. My assessment of reality is it's dangerous. So I'm only going to go outside if I need to, or when I go outside, I'm going to take care of myself, or I'm just going to understand that's what it is when I go outside. Those are the options, right? And that's part of the problem with the whole mask thing is it's, I don't know how to socially distance. I don't know how to respect people's boundaries. So I'm just going to, I'm just going to do whatever I want. So now government has to enforce these standards to make it so I can be a reasonable human being. I mean, again, that's one of my problems with California, right? There's everyone sees each other as being in each other's way. So they don't have any respect for anyone's personal space or anything. And that's what I'm seeing happen a lot now going outside in general. Now, even that I'm in Florida because of this coronavirus thing, everybody sees everybody else as a threat. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to respect that person and, you know, we can get out of each other's way and, you know, the mutually respect way. It's like, oh, you first, you first. Now it's like, I'm going to fucking get ahead of that person so they don't get in my way and get me sick. Speaking of California, though, that's where I wanted to talk about the other thing about the coronavirus. And I think, ironically, this might be shorter than the thing I just did now. So one of the things we talked about on the show and people are talking about in the culture is how the lockdown is actually going to have worse effects than the virus itself because of the economic impact. Well, I'm seeing that on a personal level. Because one of the things I most enjoyed while I was in California is gone. So my choice to leave is really affirmed here. So I used to go to 24-hour fitness all the time. It was affordable in California. I moved out here and it was like the one near me is $40. Whereas this other gym, I can get no initiation fee, Planet Fitness, no initiation fee, like $22 a month. Now the highest dumbbell is 60 pounds, which I was doing more than 60 pounds before on chest for dumbbells, but I mean, whatever, it's not a huge deal. I'm not a bodybuilder. I'm not a pro wrestler. I'm not a pro athlete, so I don't really need more than that. So it doesn't really hurt me all that much. It's more affordable. But one of the things I really loved was there was a 24 that was in Garden Walk in Anaheim, which Garden Walk is an outdoor mall that had some indoor places that was across the street from Disneyland. Now, in general, Garden Walk had trouble keeping businesses in there. There was a lot of empty stuff. It just actually, the couple years before I moved, it got bought out and they were putting in a hotel there because they're trying to do the whole captive audience thing that everyone's trying to do in California now because no one wants to fucking move because you go out in traffic and it costs you three hours on your day. So Garden Walk had trouble in general, but 24-hour fitness declared bankruptcy and they closed a bunch of locations, one of them being that Garden Walk location. So again, we see it's too expensive to run a business in Anaheim, in Southern California. How bad is your cost of living if you can't even keep businesses open across the street from Disneyland? Okay, here in Orlando, Disney World is like a resort. So it's like this whole area, you drive into it, it's got all these nice little roads. I actually enjoy just driving around the resort. So I don't even go in any of the parking lots for any of the actual parks or the hotels or anything. I just like driving around because it's like its own little city. And even on the outskirts, on all the different sides of the resort area, there's stuff that benefits from being next to Disney. Now in Anaheim, you can't even keep a gym in business. You would think people would want to go to that gym when they're there on vacation. You would think locals would go to that gym. Can't even keep it open. Can't even keep stores in that place. You would think that with how, you know, Disney Springs here, the equivalent of Downtown Disney, is huge. Downtown Disney is not as big. So you would think with the fewer shops in Downtown Disney, a mall across the street, and I literally mean across the street. I figured out a way that when I was there, could go to Disneyland for a few hours and not pay for parking and also not pay for an Uber from my apartment because my apartment was close too, because I could park in that garage and walk across the street. I'm not exaggerating how close it is. Walking distance from Disneyland. And Disneyland and California Adventure are small as it is, so you could walk from the park to the mall and back. You could even, if they had good food options at Garden Walk, you would think theoretically people would walk from Garden Walk or walk from Disneyland or California Adventure, go there, get cheaper food, and go back. But they can't get cheaper food because the tax rate is so high. Property is so expensive that they can't keep anyone in there because the rent is so high. And this is another example of it. The places that are going to be hit the least by this lockdown and this economic shutdown are the places that people loathe the most for wanting to keep things open. It's ironic in that way. It's just, when I saw that gym was closed, I was like, I'm really glad I'm not there right now. Because if I was still there, if I hadn't left at the end of January, beginning of February, end of January, if I hadn't left at the end of January, I started my job at the beginning of February. If I hadn't left, I would be even more miserable there now. Because they just shut everything down again. California went into lockdown again. And I know that's a big controversy, right? Oh, California lockdown, Florida not, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'd rather be in Florida. And all those reasons they've been outlined before. And while we're talking about politics, there was another major, everything was political this week. I think all the big news is political this week. But the major political thing this week was Trump gave his speech by Mount Rushmore. And I don't know if I mentioned it before on the show, but I was wondering what would happen with Mount Rushmore. I was like, are people going to try and like bomb it? What's going to happen? Like, how are they going to tear down Mount Rushmore? And then apparently we found out how. They're claiming the land does not belong to America because we stole it from Indians and we need to give it back. If we gave it back, would the people we gave it back to destroy it? I don't even know. Part of me kind of as a sociological experiment just wants to do that to see what happens. But obviously I don't want to see the monument destroyed. But anyway, Trump gave a speech in front of the monument. And I started seeing online people's responses to the speech. Scott Adams retweeted some lady complaining about Trump using the phrase evil people and her saying, oh, well, Trump says that anyone who disagrees with him is an evil person. And Scott Adams was pointing out, oh, well, this is just like Trump said, fine, there are fine people at the Charlottesville protests, and people said he was calling racist, white supremacist fine people. So I was like, okay, I have to watch this for myself. So I watched the whole speech for myself. This is what I'll say. When I tutor on the side, I think I may have mentioned on the show, and one of the things I tutor is SAT and ACT, and specifically with the SAT, I teach how to read political speeches. Obviously, this is going to go into my teaching as well because I'm teaching a speech class. So what politicians tend to do with speeches is they bury their point in the middle. The reason they bury their point in the middle is they don't want to alienate the audience at the beginning or at the end, because if you start saying at the beginning, like, I'm pro-life, well, then all the pro-choice people are going to tune out, right? So you have to build towards it. You have to make something that's an olive branch for everyone in the beginning, so they listen, and then an olive branch on the way out. So they're like, oh, okay, you know, this person's not as extreme as I thought. Trump did exactly this in the speech. The first part of this speech was great. I loved it. It was very much like, you know, the country's under attack. American values are under attack. This is what the issues are at stake. And anyone who is reasonable and isn't a far-left extremist or a far-right extremist would have heard it and said, oh, you know, this makes sense. And then he had a great suggestion. He said, you know, we don't want all these statues torn down. We want to remember our history. So, and he did something that I always say, stop critiquing and create. And that's what he did. He said, I want to make a national garden that has statues of all the great Americans. Now, immediately you can see his Hollywood influence here, right? It's like a walk of fame for America. He was like, oh, let's do a walk of fame for statues in D.C., a garden, a national garden. Well, I think that's great. It'll encourage tourism. It'll encourage people remembering great people. It was interesting, the people he named. I won't go into it, but just read the list. It was interesting. He picked the people he picked. Yeah, I thought that was a great idea. Then we get to the middle part of the speech, And all of a sudden he's like, and we're going to build that wall. I'm like, where did that come from? It legitimately, look, it could have been a great speech about bringing the country together and fighting against the people who aren't American. And, you know, we may have our differences about how we believe going about achieving freedom and about what the size of government should be. Now, libertarians out there, I'm not saying that I think it's okay to have more government. I'm just saying this is the way to approach it rhetorically. Oh, we may have our differences about how we think freedom should go about. We should go about getting freedom, securing it, protecting it. And we may have disagreements about what we think the size of government should be. Although maybe I even disagree with libertarians, right? Because Ayn Rand was more of a minarchist. The idea of courts and police and military are the legitimate functions. I'm not sure where every libertarian stands on those things, if they're more towards anarchy. But, I mean, every debate is essentially how much control should somebody else have over your life when you're talking about government. But he didn't go into any of that. He was just like, and then we're going to build that wall. And I was like, you missed a great opportunity here. Because if you simply have the whole thing be, well, these people aren't for freedom. These are essentially, and what I really wanted him to do is I think what he needed to do, and I think what a real leader would have done, and I think what a really historic speech would have done is just name them. The point to bury in the middle of this speech is these are still communists. All they did was they laid dormant, they readjusted their rhetoric, they renamed themselves, and now they came out in a different way. And he could have put that in the middle, and that could have been his point, and that would have been more controversial, and we could have debated that. But that's less controversial than, oh, let's build a wall, which only doubles down on the divisiveness that is enabling the people he's claiming to fight. And that, I mean, that sums up my problem with Trump in a nutshell is, and I mean, nutshell is the perfect metaphor here. Beginning and end of the speech, I didn't really have a problem with. The things he was saying, it sounded good. But then you get to that kernel in the middle, and it's just like, what the fuck are you talking about? And that's ultimately why I can't support him and why I can't like him, because I'll never get from, oh, these people are destroying America because they're communists and they want to have a non-freedom-based, non-capitalist system to build a wall. I'll never get that. I don't blame the people who aren't here. I don't blame the people who are trying to come here. I mean, maybe there are conspiracy theories out there where people are trying to import communists to fight their cause. I don't know. I don't know about any of that. But generally, I would think people who want to come here and live the American style way aren't the problem. It seems to me the problem are people who are already here, who don't like America, who have been raised in ways that they believe America is evil, who don't know what they're talking about. So I just can't get behind this wall thing. I can't. And I have so many things to talk about that I could go in many different ways right now. There, any of the stories I have left, well, no, there's one I'm going to build towards that has to go last, but any of the next two stories I have left, either of the next two stories I have left, I could go into right now. So I'm just going to go into the NFL one. Because it's part of the divisiveness that I'm talking about with the whole wall thing. And everyone's going to want to know what I think because I'm a football guy and I love football. And I know people are talking about boycotting the NFL and everything. The first thing is, let's just get it out of the way. It's quick. It's easy. The Redskins thing. I don't care. It's a business decision, right? The Redskins are forming an exploratory committee to change the name, which means they're going to change the name. Can you really get upset at somebody who's changing the name because when the name is literally based upon skin color? I mean, the Redskins. Can you imagine if there was a team called the Whiteskins or the Blackskins or the Yellowskins? It's okay. I mean, now there are questions of, did the Indians have to change their names? Could they just change to the Washington Indians? What about the Cleveland Indians? Then it goes, how far down does it go? What about the Kansas City Chiefs? And then there was the I believe it was a Babylon Bee article about the Patriots having to change their name because they're, you know, associated with white supremacy due to the founding of this country. But maybe there's a question that's going to be raised about oh, should we even have people or jobs? So now the Steelers, right? Should we have the Steelers as mascots? Because they're people. But then, you know, and I'm just doing a huge slippery slope, huge slippery slope thing right now. Can we not have the Eagles anymore? I'm thinking of Midsider Kevin out there. Because we can't have a bird. You know, it's inhumane. I always love that. It's inhumane the way we treat animals. What? What? Inhumane animals? I get it. We're humans. We should treat others and animals the way humans would, not the way animals would. I get the argument. But with this whole slippery slope argument, the point I'm making is I'm okay with. Doesn't bother me. I understand why. It's not a battle worth fighting. It may be a net good to change the Redskins' names. I mean, let's not go around and be like, hey, let's make them the Washington Whiteys now, right? I would equally be like, why are you doing that? And honestly, if they change it to the Washington Whiteys, I wouldn't even be offended. It'd be kind of funny. But then if people fought back and they changed it, I would be, okay, I get it. Let's just not do that. Seems like that's a net good. Seems like that would be the kind of thing, you know, unlike Aunt Jemima, where it's not like it's the, you know, the aunt black slave woman, you know, it wasn't the mammy maple syrup, right? It was, hey, here's a specific icon we made that's a black female. And it's a specific character that we're using for our icon. It would be like, oh, we can't have Flo promote progressive anymore. That's different from it's just like, oh, here are the Washington Blacks. Here are the Washington Yellows. Here are the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland just has really bad team names. The Browns, the Indians. I guess we're just going to change all of Cleveland's team names. But you get my point. So the Redskins thing doesn't really bother me. The more interesting story and the more absurd story is the NFL leaked. They didn't say the NFL. They didn't say the NFL. Did they say an insider in the NFL? But come on, the NFL leaked it. The idea that they're going to play the Black National Anthem before games in the week one of the season. So the reason I say they leaked this is I think this was a test market thing to see what would be said. At least they're trying for a solution, right? My solution to this whole kneeling thing was have a moment of silence, have everyone kneel, then have everyone stand up and play the national anthem. That was my compromise. Okay, there is a problem, right? We recognize there's a problem. People are dying illegitimately. What do we do when people are dying illegitimately and there's a problem? We have a moment of silence to honor them. Do that. Do that. Specifically say what it's for. That's inoffensive. To anyone with a fucking brain, that is inoffensive. Then people stand for the national anthem. Fine. But I have a question about this whole Black national anthem thing. I've heard of the Black national anthem before. I don't really go into it because it's not a battle worth fighting until this point where now it's public. Now it's national, the National Football League. And again, they're a private league, right? They're not run by the government. They're not a public league. So I guess they can say whatever they want. And it's not like the government is instituting this and saying this is the Black national anthem and this is the White national anthem. But why, if you are trying to integrate yourself into society and your claim is that you are not part of society, would you want a separate Black national anthem? This isn't even based upon heritage, right? You guys know from past episodes, one of the things I like is the difference between heritage and race. Right, if I say Polish national anthem, well, you're going to think of Poland. Right, if you say Canadian national anthem, you think of Canada. If you say British national anthem, you think of Britain, England, God Save the Queen. Right? Now, this is literally an anthem just based upon race, what you look like on the surface. What if we made a short national anthem? What if we made a male national anthem or a female national anthem? It's bizarre to me. It is bizarre to me. It is incredibly bizarre to me. And I just think it's further divisive. Because all you're going to do is you have these teams, which, by the way, if there's one example of a situation where races work together as equals towards a common goal. It's football. It's professional sports. I mean, even more than any other sport, maybe. That'd be an interesting study. It'd also be an interesting study to see how, white players are paid versus black players. I'm surprised nobody's done that yet. But I mean, just from the eyeball test, as they call it, I don't ever see any sort of disparity in that way. I see in the NFL people being paid equally based upon their talent, not based upon their race. So I don't know, but I don't have the numbers on that, is my point. That's why a study on that would be interesting. The numbers on that would be interesting. But my point is, it is an integrated system. I know they complain about coaching. Won't go into that. I mean, then you get into an argument of what amount of representation is enough. Whole other discussion, the whole coaching thing. But on the field, it's an example of integration. And what are you going to do? You're going to further make people feel divided? Now, the response to that is going to be, well, they already feel divided. That's the point. Okay, so how do we solve this problem of these people feeling not part of society? Are these people feeling divided? Do we further make them feel divided? Is that how we acknowledge it? We say, oh, you feel divided? Here's your own national anthem. Or do we say, we understand you feel divided, so we're going to make an effort to make you feel included? And a way to feel included would say, okay, here's our tradition. We are going to alter our tradition to recognize the tragedy that is existing. Hence the moment of silence I suggested. Maybe that's not the best idea. Maybe you can think of a better idea. But I can't believe that playing a national anthem that is quote-unquote black, that is quote-unquote only for a specific subgroup of people, would be better than my idea. My idea is predicated on the notion that, hey, we're all in this together, and any group being singled out and any group suffering in this way is a tragedy, so we are showing our solidarity by having a moment of silence and stopping our day and our traditions to recognize this together. Now, I get it. You're going to say, oh, well, we're recognizing this together, but what we're recognizing is that we're different, not that we're the same. Whereas I was trying to come up with an idea that was recognizing that we're the same at a root level, not that we're all different. And that's what confuses me about the whole Black National Anthem thing. It seems like separate but equal to me. Now, it's private, so you should be able to have as much separate but equal as you want, right? And what I mean by that is, if a business wants to have, if we want to have an all-black country club, have at it. I don't care. If you want to have an all-white country club, I know that's more controversial to say, have at it. I don't care. That's your right as a business to say that. Now, we have that those laws can't discriminate. We have in the laws on the books that you can't discriminate in that way, but that's the difference between a free market and not. So, I don't know. It's very confusing to me. But, of course, this is all confusing. This is all jumbled the way it is because it's an extension of the whole Black Lives Matter thing. And there was a ridiculous thing that happened this week about the whole Black Lives Matter thing, about this girl who just graduated. This girl, and I'm not going to say her name because her name's out there, but her name doesn't matter. It's not about her personally, which is the sad part. Right, it's not like we're talking about an individual choice someone made. Right, when I'm talking about Trump and his speech, his speechwriters are involved in everything. But I can sit there and I can say Trump made these choices, and this is what it represents, and this is what I don't like or do like about what Trump said. But this girl, this young woman, I don't want to say her name because this isn't really her speaking. This is the way the collectivism that's been inculcated in her. And I don't want to say her name for that reason, because it doesn't matter her name. This could be anyone. You could plug any person in there. Think of any female, typically female name, female presenting name, whatever fucking social justice term you want to use. And it could work for her. So what happened was this girl posted on TikTok. This young woman posted on TikTok, right? Of course it was TikTok. Hey, everyone, did everyone see the story that the Chinese are using it to data mine? Oh, wow. No, it's the new trend, so we have to get on there, even though it's taking advantage of us. We keep creating these social platforms that are being used for dumber and dumber reasons. And here's an example. Why does everyone need to post everything on TikTok? That's okay. I think we talked about this last episode with Dawn. But she did it. She went the whole nine yards and she posted on TikTok. What she posted was a video saying she was going to stab people. Now, she had a point. I'm going to get into that. But because of that, cancel culture swung back around. And this is, again, my problem with Trump and the wall. And in the middle of the speech saying, oh, we're going to put a wall in. Swung back around. And the extreme leftist, the Black Lives Matter supporter, her job at Deloitte got taken away from her. So this was a Harvard student, which is insane that the Harvard students are thinking on this level. Had a job at Deloitte, made a TikTok video, and cancel culture canceled her. She lost her job. The job offer got rescinded. That sucks for her. I feel bad for her. I feel bad because I think she's young. I think she doesn't understand the implications of what she's doing, which is ironic because she's a Harvard student. She should know, but this gives you a look into how good these schools actually are. And I don't think she deserved to have her job ruined over this. I don't think she literally meant she was going to stab people, and we'll get into that. So I think this is an example of if cancel culture is bad to what happens to the right, it's bad to what happens to the left. I honestly don't think she deserved this. But at the same time, don't say something so stupid on social media. So what she said is, the next person she hears saying all lives matter, she's going to stab. And then after she stabs them and they're bleeding out, she's going to show them her paper cut and say, all cuts matter. Now, I get what she's trying to do. She's trying to be over the top, right? She's trying to use, ironically, Ann Coulter type rhetoric, right? The shock jock rhetoric that's been on the right forever. Not forever, but for a while. You know, it's almost like South Park type rhetoric to prove how absurd saying all lives matter is. I get it. It was a joke. It was a joke on her part. It was a bad joke, and she shouldn't have posted it online. That's a joke you could say with your friends, and if you all agree, you know, that becomes a real virtue signal, right? Virtue signaling isn't about like, oh, hey, let's go to the entire internet and the entire world and say, here's my virtues. No, virtue signaling is when you go to an in-group and you want to prove you're part of that in-group by signaling that you share those values. That's what she was doing. She was virtue signaling, but she was virtue signaling into the abyss. She wasn't virtue signaling to the people who agree with her. If she had kept that to herself, in the sense of what I mean is she had texted that to friends, or she had sent that video, even that's dangerous in today's day and age. You don't know if somebody you send it to is going to send it out. But say she sent it to a group chat of everyone she knew agreed with her, like best friends at Harvard, right? And she texted it to that group. I love how I said like she had a group text that was named like a professional wrestling tag team's Harvard Best Friends. All right, there's an actual tag team named Best Friends in AEW, All Elite Wrestling. If she had said it to them, it would have been fine. Everyone would have laughed and her life would have been fine. Everyone would have moved on. You know, unless one of her friends was a dick and wanted to cancel her. But she had to broadcast it, and it came across like she really wanted to stab people, not because her point wasn't made, but because people can't hear her point because of how dumb the Black Lives Matter saying is as a catchphrase. Because this is her point. Her point is, if somebody is in greater danger than someone else, then there's no need to point out that the person in lesser danger is in danger as well. It's basically, let me simplify this. Her point is triage. That is her point. She's using the medical battle time concept of triage. Oh, well, this person is going to bleed out and this person needs some minor help. They need a painkiller. Okay, well, we're going to take care of these people who are bleeding out before we take care of the people who need painkillers. this person's about to die on deathbed. This person has a minor thing that, you know, the infection may kill them in 2 days. Right now, this person's going to die in 2 hours. We're going to take care of that person first. That's the argument. Here's the problem with that argument. First of all, it's not based in reality, but that's a whole other discussion, right? I don't want to get into the how in danger are black people's lives argument. I don't want to get into that. What I want to get into is the rhetoric of the phrase Black Lives Matter. When that phrase is heard, there's no violence associated with it. This goes to the whole idea of words being violent nowadays, right? Microaggressions being violent. The people saying it are not achieving their purpose of what they're trying to say, or perhaps, and some of you may point this out, perhaps that is their intent, to smuggle in the violence without there being real enough violence. But this is where they failed, and this is where they should be attacked. Because if there are enough rational people left, they will recognize what's going on, and that's why people are trying with the All Lives Matter, and it's a rhetorical snafu all around. But when you hear Black Lives Matter, you just think of the floating abstraction of the idea of, yeah, black people are important too, and black people should be allowed to live their lives too. And you don't disagree with that. But then you go, hey, wait. That's not what we're talking about in America when we talk about individualism. We're talking about all lives matter. And that's why, you know, on the past couple episodes, William and I have said individual lives matter is sort of the answer to that. But I've been uncomfortable with that individual lives matter because all of the framing is sort of wrong. Because you're not pointing to anything. Black Lives Matter. Okay, yeah, okay. I don't disagree. I don't disagree with the statement Black Lives Matter. I don't think anyone listening to this show, and I don't even want to say, like, don't listen to the show, but I want to say if you think black lives don't matter, if you think any individual life doesn't matter, if you think individualism doesn't matter, I mean, check your premises, right? Think about it. Think about why you think that. So you hear Black Lives Matter, you're like, yeah, okay, all right, yeah, Black Lives Matter. But the point they're trying to make is, and the point this girl in this video was trying to make, so let's use her as an example and say that I believe that the point she was trying to make is the point that people who say this catchphrase in general are trying to make. Black lives matter because black lives are in danger, so we have to say they matter in order to point out that they're in danger. Because the only reason they're in danger is people aren't acting like they matter. This is where the flaw in the catchphrase is. Why don't we call it Protect Black Lives? That's just off the top of my head. Protect Black Lives. Okay. That makes me go, shit, what do we need to protect black lives from? What do we need to protect them from? Shit, someone's killing them? Fuck, yeah, let's protect black lives. And then we go, well, protect white lives. You go, fuck you, white lives are fine. They don't need to be protected in the same way. And you say, well, the police are attacking white lives too. Yeah, okay, I agree with the whole police brutality thing. But if we use that as a way to get in, if we use protect black lives as a way to get in there, that'll protect the white lives too, right? My point being with the whole protect black lives thing, or however you want to say it, right? Come up with something rhetorically that makes it about the fact that they're in danger and there's violence here. Is the focus on that? Focus on the violence. Focus on what's actually wrong. Not this unintentional. Maybe it's intentional. I don't know. Again, we could argue about what are the, you know, we have the Marxist roots here. And there's always the argument, and this is something that fascinates me in life. And there's a story in here that I will write one day. And there's a story about who are the ones leading and who are the ones following. Because I believe a girl like this, I don't believe she's a thought leader. A young lady like this, I don't believe she's a thought leader. I think she's following what she's been taught, and she's following the prevailing winds. But somebody is surely setting this agenda, right? How many people is it? How do they get it out there? It's such an interesting question to me because it's always an interesting question as to sort of in like the ant or the bee metaphor, who's the queen and who are the worker bees? It's interesting to me. And this whole thing of, you know, Black Lives Matter versus Protect Black Lives, it's just an example to me of, and who's the worker bees. It's just an example to me of, and this is the last thing I want to talk about, what's wrong with conversation in our current culture. And it's what's wrong with it is there is no conversation. This fucking drives me nuts. This is the number one thing that drives me nuts about the internet. Now, there's a couple ways you could approach the internet, right? Is the internet a broadcast medium or is the internet a conversation medium? You could approach it either way, and you could have different platforms for both. But they're used equally. People are broadcasting and having conversations at the same time. And what I mean by that is, let's take the platform of Twitter. You have a platform that could be used to just blast like, hey, our new merch is out. Hey, these are our shows that are coming out. These are when we're going on tour. And I say this because I follow a lot of bands, and that to me is the most useful thing about Twitter. I know whenever Newfound Glory releases new merch. I know when they release a new music video. I hear about bands I wouldn't have heard about otherwise because they're broadcasting to people. Now, then, in a marketing perspective, it makes sense for these brands. You know, you see Wendy's do this. You see these bands do it. To have their broadcasts feel like conversations. Have a poll, ask a question. But then, you know, if you're big enough, you get a deluge of responses. You can't really have a conversation. But you can have the illusion of conversation, which creates the feeling of personalness between you and the fan. Oh, well, I have a personal relationship with Wendy's. Oh, hi, Wendy's really sounds like me. I'm gonna go there instead of Burger King or McDonald's. But people aren't doing that because what the internet is mainly used for now is just blasting your opinions with no basis for them. The number of accounts I have blocked on Twitter because they're just either only voicing opinions or they're not even people. They're opinion-based accounts. Like, there's an account out there, Comic Book Movie Cringe. And I tend to agree with it a lot of times. What they're doing is they're pointing out tweets that people made that they're giving their opinions that are cringe, quote-unquote. Now, they don't ever point out why they're cringe. They just say, ha-ha, look at this absurd opinion. But all they're doing is giving the opinion back of someone else. And then there's other accounts that's like, one perfect shot. And it's just a tweet of a perfect shot. They don't ever explain why it's a perfect shot. And a lot of times they use shots that aren't perfect shots, in my opinion. So it's just an opinion-based account. So any of these times these come up, they just block. I just block them. Anytime they come up in my feed, I just block them. And likewise, people just post opinions. And then people just retweet opinions that they agree with. They'll just be like, oh, my favorite Spider-Man is Andrew Garfield. My favorite Spider-Man is Tobey Maguire. And that's it. That'll be what people say. And then you respond, and I say this because I had an interaction in a Discord. I don't remember what the exact... Oh, I remember it was over Watchmen, right? I had a conversation with Watchmen, and someone was saying what the reality of Watchmen was. And they were just so completely fucking wrong. And this is something I know about, right? I'm only going to talk about it if I know about it. So completely wrong. And then ultimately, they wouldn't defend themselves. They were just giving their opinions. Well, Watchmen is this, and the series is this, and the book is this, and the movie is this. And I cited sources, I said things, and they were like, well, actually, it's this. So they were literally just giving their opinion. And so I just was like, this is an example of proving that you don't know what you're talking about. It's proving that you can't even understand what you're watching or reading. And then he replied, well, you could... I could say the same thing about you. And that's the point we're at. Everything is just opinions without backing anything up. And everyone thinks their opinions are equally valid without having done the work. And I saw this thing in a very, very major way. And this, again, led to me blocking someone on Twitter. So, recently, Ray Fisher... He played Cyborg in the Justice League movie, and he's in the Snyder Cut. came out, and I know, I'm not going to read his tweet because I don't have it, I don't have it memorized, but basically he accused Joss Whedon on the reshoot set of Justice League of being abusive. He basically took the social justice strategy of saying abstract things and not backing them up. And I'm not saying he can't back them up. I don't know anything about this situation. But his tweet was just, hey, Joss Whedon was abusive on the set of Justice League. And he was enabled by Geoff Johns and John Burke. Okay, so that exists, right? I'm not really interested in commenting on that. That will be proven or unproven or never discussed again in the future. That's a whole separate issue. But then, of course, a supposed quote-unquote Zack Snyder fan made a tweet saying, Ray Fisher for Howard Rourke in The Fountainhead? Because, and this is my explaining it, because we all know Zack Snyder is planning on doing a Fountainhead at some point. Hopefully he's actually going to do it. My fingers are crossed. So he was saying, the person tweeting this was saying, oh, well, you know, Ray Fisher has integrity because he stood up for what he thought was right, even though it might hurt his career. So why doesn't he play someone who has integrity? Now, first of all, just because someone acts a certain way in real life doesn't mean they can act that way in a movie, right? I mean, the number of roles that are similar to my personality that I couldn't play because I would be a shit actor, it doesn't work how it works. Now, this is sort of like the Little Mermaid controversy where they cast a black woman as Ariel and people were like, well, she can just dye her hair red. Ray Fisher is black. Fine, you want him as Rourke? He has to dye his hair red. I believe it is important that Ariel has red hair in The Little Mermaid because all her sisters are blonde or brunette, and the point is that she stands out from them. That's why she has red hair. But it is even more important that Howard Rourke has red hair. It is symbolic of the fire of his individuality, the fire of his passion. That is super important. So I replied to the tweet, and I was like, is he going to dye his hair red? That's fine. You could cast anyone in the role, right? As long as they're willing to dye their hair red. Now, I don't know the implications of, I mean, how many redheads are there who are black? I don't know. I don't know the implications of if it's dyed hair versus if it's not dyed hair. But I mean, Walter Kovacs, Rorschach in Snyder's movie had obviously dyed hair. But that's because Snyder does things extreme stylistically. So it probably wouldn't be a problem if you cast a black person and dyed his hair red. But that's not the point. It's not about his race. I said, is he going to dye his hair red? And the person replied, is that important to the story? Like, are you fucking kidding me? You're going to sit here, who should play Howard Rourke, and you don't know the basics of Howard Rourke? And I said that, I go, you don't know the basics of the character? And he said, honestly, all I've ever seen is the 1940s movie. I've never read the book. This is where we're at as a culture. This is where we're at with social media. Everyone is talking all the time about things they don't know about, and they talk to people who know about it. If there is one person you should not talk to about The Fountainhead and Zack Snyder, if you do not know anything, it's me. It is literally me. I will make that claim about the planet Earth. If there is one person on the planet Earth, besides Zack Snyder, that you shouldn't talk to about Zack Snyder and The Fountainhead, it's fucking me, okay? If you don't know what you're talking about, don't fucking come at me and talk about that. There are a lot of hills that I will not die on. I will die on this hill. Don't fucking talk to me. If you don't fucking know what you're talking about The Fountainhead and Zack Snyder, don't fucking talk to me about a conversation, a topic that deals with both of those things. Don't deal with it. On that Venn diagram, in the middle of that circle, the Zack Snyder Fountainhead Venn diagram, in that point, there's a thing that says, don't fucking talk to Justin if you don't know what you're talking about. Okay? And that guy did it. So I immediately blocked him. But this is the fucking problem we have. We've got everyone running around acting like they can talk about everything when there are legitimate experts out there and there are people who legitimately are knowledgeable about these things. And because there's more of them, and this is a question more than a statement, because there's more of them, it seems like they raise each other up. Because when you don't know things, you don't know what you don't know. and then you hear other people saying the things that sound right because that's what you think is right, and then it becomes an echo chamber of people who don't know what they don't know. So I'm not even talking about the divisiveness. I'm not even talking about the tribalism right now. I'm just talking about how that person had like 3,000 followers. And he had 10 times the reply to his tweet than I did to my tweet. When I'm the one who knows what I'm talking about and he doesn't. Now I wonder, because I'm not special. I'm just a dude, right? I'm just a guy. I'm just a guy trying to know the right things. How many other experts out there that we don't know about that the same thing happens to every day? Or who don't even participate in the conversation anymore because they don't want to deal with those type of people. Because that's what you do. You drive these people underground. You drive them into their own lives. That's the point I'm getting to. That's the point I'm getting to where it's like, fuck, why am I doing this? Why would I put myself through this? I think that's a good place to end. Those are my thoughts this week. I'm not really going to plug anything on the way out. You know all the stuff. Tell your friends. Appreciate you, Liberty.me. Listeners, there's Patreon. Now we're on Locals. All that good stuff. All I'll say is, this concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin Emelznesky reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.